right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Havoc.
I'm Alex. Hello, welcome back.
Today we are
for the first time, whatever.
Right, could be first time. Today our guest is a fellow named Adam Korga, a writer, systems analyst, and a 20-year survivor of the IT industry. That's saying something. Having seen the digital world from the inside out, Adam has dedicated his work to demystifying technology and stripping away the jargon that often keeps people in the dark. He is the author of the IT Dictionary and uses, and the, excuse the language, Fuck Up Almanac, appropriately named. And that's a series of four books where he uses failure as a powerful educational tool to show us how the world really works. Adam believes that by understanding why systems break from code to social structures, we can better navigate the chaos of modern life. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Welcome.
Hi, Adam.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So where are you from? Whereabouts?
Well, I live in Berlin in Germany, but originally I come from Poland. That's why I'm using pen name. I don't want to torture people with the Polish names.
Well, that's very kind of you. Awesome. So what gave you the idea for writing the IT dictionary and then, you know, the Fuck Up Almanac coming out?
Okay, so that's interesting because the ideas were totally different. So first of all, if you ask me a year ago if I would write a book, I would start get worried about your mental state. At some point, I was meeting a person who worked in legal, and I came up with a joke slash gift to translate what people in IT say into what they really mean, with a standard inside jokes like IDT&T, picnic, code 80, and so on and so on and so on. Have a probably understand them. Pepka, yes, of course, it's there. Basically, weird, many ways how to say that the user is wrong. Or worse, in a way that they wouldn't understand. The easiest to understand is IDT&T. If you write it down, you will understand.
Yes. I'm very, very familiar with asking people if they happen to have their IDT&T card.
Exactly. So basically, that was the beginning. And, well, the relation didn't last, but I started writing more and more. And I started noticing that there's more to comment or basically laugh at, and suddenly from 10 page speaking guide, it turned morphed into a full-blown dictionary that goes all over the IT industry, and I realized that it's bigger than just a series of jokes, so I organized it, and here we are. And as for the second F Almanac, I will spare you the language, it was basically, I was always interested with system analysis and stuff, and let's be clear, in engineering world is full of fun stories where something went terribly wrong, and I thought that it could be a good way to promote the IT dictionary, but after one afternoon and having something like 40 or 50 very interesting cases, I realized it was something bigger and started digging into that and realized that it's definitely not a small work. Originally, I thought about one book, then I thought it would be two books, and then when I started organizing, structuring, and thinking how to present it, also in a way that it wouldn't be another boring encyclopedia, because that's definitely not something I would like to do. So it would be also digestible for people without the IT, physics, constructions, and all the other sciences you can think of. It had to introduce those concepts, and well, it ended up that it will be four books. So fun work. Nice. and hopefully it will help somebody.
Well, I certainly hope so. Can you maybe give us a little teaser about like one of the case studies you did?
Oh, that's a difficult question because the first volume has almost 100 of them.
Wow.
Okay.
So maybe the story about some most people might remember, but I won't tell you the dates right now. I would need to open the book, the notes. But one day Facebook locked themselves or erased themselves from the internet because they messed up BGP configuration. And that happens, but the ridiculous part was that their entire infrastructure was so centralized that by modifying these config files, they did not erase only the Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp from the internet, but also their internal tools used to configure it. So they needed to go physically to the data centers to physically plug into the computers. And to make it even more fun, they realized that even their card readers on the entrance door were connected to the same system. So they literally needed to break into their data centers to fix the configuration.
Oh, my goodness. So
that was quite... I think it was 2021 or 2022, but don't quote me on that. But that's also the nice case because I mentioned BGP. If you have an IT background, you probably, especially a Unix administrator, you probably know what's that. But if you're just a regular human being using the computers, the chances are you've never heard of this acronym. So the entire chapter about the disasters related to BGP is started by Explainer, where the concept of the protocol, what is it for and how it works, is introduced by comparing into postal services and how badly things can go wrong. There is absolutely no code explanation, no RFC and stuff, but it gives a proper mental model to understand why it's there and how it works.
It's actually a really good analogy point. Yeah. Fairly cool.
I think this particular explainer might be on my blog, but because I was posting it as a demo.
Okay. No, that's wonderful. I did not read all of your blog. I did look through your website and do some research, make sure I'm familiar, etc. So I'll have to check out the blog now. And you can find what is your website so people can go check it out?
Well, it is adamkorga.com. As long as you remember my first and last name, you just add .com and that's it.
All right. And for those tomatoes out there that need special assistance, it's adamkorga.com.
Even I can do that one.
Yeah, I could probably figure that one out too.
Good. That means that it works.
I hope so. We all hope so, right? So you mentioned, like you said, right, the ID10T, the PEBCAC, the Code 18, etc. Do you want to run down what all those initialisms mean for people or acronyms?
Well, they all mean the same, that the problem is the user. But the joke behind that is quite different. So ID10T, like I say, if you write it down, you'll realize that it is spelled as idiot.
Picnic, even I know that one.
Picnic and PEBCATs are variants of picnic is problem in chair, not in computer. PEBCAT is problem exists between keyboard and chair. And code 80 or code 18, depends if you're thinking Imperial or metric system, basically says that the problem is 80 centimeters or 18 inches from the monitor.
Wonderful.
Kind of sounds like the auto mechanic thing. Like I think the problem's a loose nut behind the wheel, right?
Yeah.
Kind of similar to that.
Yeah, basically, most industries has their own inside jargon to just let the steam off. IT is not a different. And sometimes it's good to use this kind of codes when you speak with the group. Not that I ever did it, of course,
but sure.
You can use it also in the negotiations or conversations with the customer when you really know where the problem is, but you cannot tell it because that's who pays the bills.
Yep.
Have you ever had to deal with something as silly as they didn't even have their computer plugged in? I'm sure people are just that non-technical sometimes.
I never worked that close to customers, to technical support, so not this kind of stuff.
Okay.
But I did get quite some error reports when we, for instance, deployed a new version of the system where it was purely internal CRM or something like that. And the customer's QA reported to us the bug that the link on their home website didn't point to the right system because it was still posting to linking to the version posted by their previous software house. And he was convinced it was my fault. So.
I actually have a pretty good one on that. When I was cutting my teeth, I was, you know, early on a Unix sysadmin, and all of the sysadmins you had the administrators and the sysadmins, but all of us had to take. Sorry, that was a play on a Windows person, but we all had to take on a help desk for shifts, right? We all kind of shared the load for users. And I had a user call me up, and he working on the manufacturing floor. And at this point, I think it was Windows 95. And he calls me up and he's like, hey, you know, we're supposed to shut our computers down. And, you know, I just want to make sure I do it right. And so, you know, he goes through the process. And if you recall back then, the screen came up and it said, it is now safe to turn your computer off. Right.
Yep.
When you did the shutdown process, and he goes, well, I don't know. Is that okay? Can I really do that? And I'm like, yeah, you're fine. You know, we usually tell people not to do this, but in this case, you're just fine. You can just go ahead and power it off. I get the call from the same guy on Monday. This is on a Friday. And he goes, well, I don't know what to do. There's no message on the screen that says it's okay or it's safe to turn my computer back on.
Well,
I don't know. I don't know. So maybe it wasn't unplugged, but, you know, fairly close. And, you know, you have to understand, especially back then, technology was fairly new, right? This was in the 90s. And not everyone owned a computer. In fact, quite a lot of the population had never even seen or touched one. So,
yeah, but
can we go back to those days?
Yeah, but the problem is still there. Let's be clear. There's a lot of stuff that we think as obvious, but even recently I've read some article where a guy who was a professor at some university, and it was quite good American university, complained that he needed to start first classes on the computer science degree faculty by explaining what the concept of files and file systems. So you'd think that the students at computer science are advanced, and they didn't know this. For somebody who remembers the time when you could safely turn off the computer or even DOS. It sounds odd, but if you think about how the technology looks like nowadays, it's natural.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gotten much better.
I mean, yeah, but nowadays, if you think about all the cloud and stuff, you don't think in concept of files, you think in the concept of data. You don't know if it's a one file, 10 files, separate audio in English, German, or whatever. You just watch a movie.
As long as they're not written in Unicode.
Yeah. I do have a story about that in the Kakap Almanac as well.
I bet. I've got quite a few. I've seen break backup applications pretty badly. Virus scanners go kind of wonky on it at times.
Yeah, the one that I have is when they tried, and it was also quite fresh. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. And Japan wanted to standardize their system centrally, and they came up, they realized that converting from half-baked, half fixed read, half katakana, one of their alphabets, does not translate nicely to UTF-8 with UTF-8 or UTF-16, never mind, in kanji. So they came up with the idea that phonetic translation of the name and the date or day of birth is enough to identify the person in the country that has 125 million people.
Okay.
That was fun. And basically, Prime Minister had to publicly apologize for the mess that resulted.
Oh, I can imagine. Wow. So, I mean, how do you, so do you just kind of farm news and articles and then dig deeper on them? How do you come up with all the case studies for your F-Up Almanac?
So that's an interesting question about the process. So at the beginning, the process was very similar for both books. I just started collecting interesting material or something I remembered, something I could think of. At some point, I also used Gen AI to just come up with next ideas. Of course, everything had to be verified and stuff. So, and believe me, it was by its own source of disaster stories when I needed to throw away, I think, 12 cases when I started fact-checking them. But basically, I collected like 100, 120 cases all over the place, and I started looking for a structure because I didn't want to make it as just a collection or alphabetically or chronologically collected. I wanted to tell a story of how the IT and engineering works. So basically, when I noticed that I had enough material, I started grouping, identifying underlying issues. And as you can see also on the website, the book first volume is purely about the foundations. So it is first part is purely about compute, like race condition, time encoding, some numbers, problems with scale, this kind of stuff. Second is networking, then there is storage, then backups. So yeah, there are some stories about that, and then disaster recovery. So once I had the structure or what I wanted to, what story I'd like to say, tell, and what mechanism I wanted to explain, then the search was much more narrowed down. So I knew that I wanted to illustrate the problem with, I don't know, database indexes. Sorry for the jargon right now. So I needed to find the problems related purely to that. And once I had this, I could, obviously, reading news was not enough, even though in some cases I was getting the cases that were literally happening when I was writing. It was much more research and digging. In some cases, it was even a little bit of investigation. There is one case that I didn't find official reports because there are no official reports, but there are some, let's say, smoking guns suggesting that something went wrong. But it is clearly stated that it is speculation. However, ultimately, like I said, once I had the structure, finding the cases matching the pattern was much, much easier, and it was just proper mix of going through documentation, going through some Google or Google on steroids, which is LLM, some GPT, no matter which one, and then verifying everything that it found, because I even have a quote at some point. I got that for the last couple messages, I was heavily bending the fact or straightforward making things up so that it, the conversation would be more fluent. The stories didn't happen while I was using it for research, so it was fun.
Oh, yeah. I think Alex and I both have strong opinions on AI in general. Don't you?
It Alex? May be wrong, but it's confident when it's wrong, for sure.
Yeah, but that's interesting by its own. I even posted some rant about that. But maybe I would ask, what is your opinion about the AI in general?
Well, I... Wow, that's a whole show in and of itself. So I think honestly, it can be an awesome tool to augment a human in its current form, but it is without question, in my eyes, exceedingly dangerous, especially the directions we're going with it. I think the reliance on it is problematic. It is akin to me to the short form TikTok videos. It introduces a form of brain rot in individuals and a trust for a machine that is literally just farming. And it's literally, you know, it's predictive word. When you go typing on your phone, and it's, you know, you get the next word, and boom, boom, boom. That's all an LLM is on steroids, right? So it's just trying to predict where. So, you know, like you said, it'll come up with quotes that from people that don't exist or from people that never said that. It'll come up with case studies or scenarios that have never happened, and it'll do it with complete confidence, right? So... My real take on it is this. I think that, you know, and this is a catch 22. It should never have been released to the wild, right? Not yet. That's a number one. Full stop. This should have been in research territory for quite some time. But the catch 22 is, if you leave it in research, the funding is dismal, right? Just tiny drops of funding to research it. Whereas if you bring it out to the public and, you know, proclaim that it's going to, you know, create world peace and make everyone basically free to do whatever they want because the jobs will just be automated and whatever the case is, you know, then the funding comes. And we've seen massive, massive gains in the technology. But we're not fencing it in correctly, in my opinion. And we are certainly going down the very wrong road to make something that can think about a complex idea in seconds where it takes us weeks, months, years. That is dangerous. And if you don't see that, I don't know what to say, right?
Yeah, so I kind of agree. Yeah. But the problem is not with the tool, it's with us. That's the core message I realized at some point, that yeah, it is a tool. Let's be clear, a hammer is a great tool. It is very useful for many use cases and stuff. But if a surgeon takes it, tries to use it to remove your appendix, well, that's not a hammer's fault, let's say. So if you understand how it works, what it can do and what it cannot, that's a half of the problem. But second problem is also the organization issue. Is about how we train it or what do we train it for. So one thing is the statistical nature, like you said, it is predictive text. I like to compare it to the coin flip. Let's be clear, if we play a game of flipping a coin and you realize that 8 out of 10 throws it is heads and only 2 out of 10 is tails, you would at some point start saying screaming heads pretty much even before I throw the coin, just because it's easier than trying to figure out trying to guess and risking the loss. That's exactly what the LLM is doing, except instead of one coin, you throw probably a couple million of them while it's an earthquake and you need to figure out the position of planets at the same time. But logic is the same. But the problem is also in the reward function. I mean, if you think about this last 20 years of IT big tech, was the user retention. The main value was to keep people in the system. Basically, in social media, the more time you spent on scrolling TikTok or Instagram or whatever, the more time the company has to show you ad and get the revenue. On Spotify or other Netflix, the more time you watch the movie, the higher the perceived value, so the churn is lower. In the LLMs or chatbots, the entire logic behind that is flipped upside down. The more time you need to spend to get the result is the worse situation. It doesn't bring you value. It makes you frustrated. And it doesn't bring the directly revenue because the subscription is flat, so it's not a benefit, while the cost for the company goes through the roof. So, but still, the entire generation of the management was raised on the retention is key. And then you have also the psychological aspect that as a human, we do value confidence. So basically, if you ask an engineer you encountered this. If you ask an engineer or specialist about something, you will get a long, boring answer full of "it depends" and "I need to check." If you ask somebody from business who doesn't, who understand the communication better, I don't want to say that they are somewhat worse. It's just a different value, different perspective, different background. They will immediately give you the answer because that's what is perceived as good. And if you think about the RHLF, or human reinforcement learning loop, or feedback loop, or whatever, I don't remember right now. If people evaluate the answer, they don't want to hear "I don't know" or "I'm not sure," even though later they will say that they would prefer it. So you have not a catch-22, you have pretty much people don't know what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you hit on a lot of good points there, Adam. And even in my real-world experience, I like to interact with people with an automotive mechanic background, with people on groups, and try to help them out. And I've seen a lot more people these days. I don't know if they're just trying to seem like they're more knowledgeable. They'll take their question and then put it in some kind of AI thing and then give them the answer back, trying to seem like they know about it, but half the time the answer is not correct. And I'm basing my answers on real world experience that I know to be true. And this AI is 100% confident putting forth these solutions to these problems, and it's not the real solution. Even if you correct it on it, it'll say, "Oh, yeah, I accidentally made an error," you know, like and it still tries to sound confident in its wrongness, if that's a word.
Yeah, that's. But if you understand how it works, you can use it to speed up a lot of processes.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like, research. Research is a huge one, right? Being able to ask questions and it'll pull together data for you. But you have to go, like Adam had said, right? You must go back in and double check what it sent you. You've got to verify that this is good data. This isn't made up or, you know, from a source that's just not reliable or trustworthy, right?
Yeah, another example is another buzzword, vibe coding. Let's be clear, it is a great tool to generate the code. But what people don't realize, even IT specialists, is that there were already attempts of automated programming in 1980s. And there were even some minor minuscule successes to generate the code based on human language description of the problem. All fine, except that the human description of the problem with covering all the edge cases and nuances was even 2-3 times longer than the actual code that needed to be written. Let's be clear, there is a category of text that is describing everything in detail, and most people don't understand it, including me, that's all the contracts and legal documents. It's not so convoluted because lawyers have this weird fetish. It's because they try to cover every single edge case they can think of using natural language. And coming back to vibe coding, if you can explain the problem, if you remember that there are some limits in context and stuff, it can speed you up. But you still need to check what was generated, and many times you need to say, stop, you're going wild, let's step back and refactor something because we do something wrong and stuff. Again, if you understand how the tool works, what it can do, what it cannot, it is great.
Yeah. Right place, right. And like you had mentioned, you know, the user adoption, right? Generic user adoption. It's a flat rate, I think, for all of them or most of them, right? Some do credits for things like image generation, etc. And it's interesting if you were charged what the actual cost for the GPU cycles you're eating up are, you would not use this thing. I promise you that. There's not a chance you would be paying that much money to chat with a machine. Just, you wouldn't. So what do you think?
What are these costs that you're talking about?
Which costs do you mean?
The GPU cycles. So
yeah,
true cost of actually serving up that application to a user, right?
So basically, think of it if you have mechanical background. If you have a car, it costs you something. That's great. But if you use the car to drive, the engine gets used much more. It gets old much more. Not to mention all the fluids with the main one, gas. That you need to spend just to drive another mile. So the more you use the car, the most it costs you. Similarly with the AI, basically those are thousands of machines. One thing is to have those machines in data centers, but when they are just standing and collecting the dust, you pay for the fact that you have the data center, you're paying pretty much for the garage and security of the garage. But the moment when you start using them, that's when they start consuming energy, electricity. The CPUs get old and used up much faster, and that's the difference. So every single query you say, every single prompt you send to ChatGPT, Gemini, Cloud, or whatever, triggers hundreds of machines going full on. The same applies, by the way, the same applies also to Google Search, even without the AI mode. But the cost of query, I don't remember the numbers, you could find the estimate of a single Google query is even 200-300 times lower than the AI prompt.
Yeah.
That's why nowadays Amazon, Microsoft, or Google are either leasing or even thinking about buying entire nuclear power plants in the US.
Yeah, the amount of, as you said, right, you've got the infrastructure to support it, and then the data center, then you've got the electrical infrastructure needed to power these things, then you've got water that needs to come in to cool, right? Water is used extensively in the air handlers, both for cooling and heating. Why would you heat a data center? Humidity. If you've ever noticed, it gets too dry outside and you walk by your friend and touch them and pop. Well, that damages computer equipment. So you need humidity to be higher. And the only way to introduce that is to actually heat the room. The machines themselves are heating the room. So you're trying to cool the room, or not necessarily cool the room, but remove the hot air from the room. Right. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you're extracting the humidity. So you have to go through heating cycles. Okay. So now you've got heaters working as well as coolers to keep the humidity at a certain level. Then you've got the machines, the GPUs, et cetera, that are all just, I mean, they're operating at, you know, crazy levels of power. The amount of power needed to power just one rack of AI gear is I think something like, 20 or 40 racks of standard servers. Okay. So yeah, when you think about that, the amount of cost that goes into typing, you know, is my dog really a Rottweiler, and it coming back and giving you, well, you know, is astronomical. You'd be people that use it normally, and I'm not talking heavy users, would likely be paying thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars per month for this.
So my question is, who's footing that bill and why are they footing that bill so people can find out what month is best to plant broccoli in my area or whatever they ask it?
Oh, we're going into big tech economy. So the problem is that you have a so-called FANG, a couple of huge companies, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Meta, and G is Google. I don't remember what is second A. Never mind. It's not important right now. And Apple. Mm-hmm. Some of those companies were for the last decade or even two decades sitting on huge revenue and didn't know what to do with the money. At some point, there were estimates that Apple alone had something like close to $1 trillion in the bank account and they didn't know where to spend it. Similarly, Google. The Meta was slightly different because Zuckerberg was looking for a next big thing. That's why they spent so much on the metaverse. But basically, after the internet and dot-com bubble, pretty much everything was growing, but there was no technical revolution to invest in. AI is the revolution that came, which means that all this money that was lying around can be sent into something that is a revolution. And it will change how the technology works. There is also bubble because they spend the money they earned in the last two decades without thinking about the fact that this money should actually bring a new revenue. Right now, they are still on the wave of spending the money that they accumulated so far. There are already some notes about the typical investor hype bubble when OpenAI signs a contract with Oracle for $300 billion to get the data centers. So Oracle needs to sign a contract with NVIDIA to buy GPUs, and then NVIDIA invests this money in OpenAI. And this industry is full of these kind of cycles where the money is just changing pockets.
It's just one big Ouroboros.
Which means that snake eating his tail. Investors are also adding because it looks like something's happened. But, you know, by twisting the cup of tea, it won't get any sweeter. Sooner or later, somebody needs to add the freaking sugar. Right now, they are just mixing that. But the same happened in 1990s, early 2000s with dot-com bubble, when literally everything you put .com, it was immediately considered a great investment with the infamous pets.com. And yeah, most companies failed. The market crashed after that. But during that time, the giants like Amazon and Google were created. So basically, it wasn't the technology that was wrong. It was just the blind following the hype. Same will happen here. Most companies who go following AI hype will fail, but there will be couple that will grow. Some of them might even join the funk group, club, let's say, that Anthropic is on the good way to do that, especially considering that they have much more enterprise-driven business model for coding. But it's a guessing game. For now, we're just riding on the savings from last decade. That's it.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it, right? Because I've talked about the fact that this is a bubble, right? And I feel like I always have to explain that that doesn't mean that the technology is going away or it's not going to be available. It just means the same thing it meant, just like you said, for the dot-com bubble. The internet didn't go away. Internet purchasing didn't go away. It's just all of these smaller companies that just came in on the, you know, the idea. You know, there was money being put out, but none coming in, right? And so those businesses failed. We see of the same thing, or at least I think that we see a lot of the same thing going on right now. You know, everyone's got an AI startup, everyone. And they're all going to change the world and make your life better. And, you know, the sad fact is there's a very high percentage of companies that go to deploy AI and it just doesn't get them across the finish line. It never materializes and produces this revenue decreasing event that they thought they would have. So.
Well, actually, the IT dictionary has entire, and 150 is making fun about the IT bubble and hype. But I even created a small comic that I really, blowing my own horn, but I really like it. That you know the meme like one guy says something and then entire crowd answers. So I created like, what do we want AI? When do we want it? Yesterday. What should it do? What do we want AI? What should it do? We don't know. Where should we put it? Everywhere. When do we want it? Yesterday. That's literally what happens with AI. Nobody knows what it would bring. Nobody knows how it would work. But we want to put it everywhere and right now. So.
Yeah. And not finding those use cases first and clearly identifying them and having a plan is you know, it's the hype, right? Nobody wants to get left. It's the you know, what do they call it? FOMO, right? Fear of missing out.
Yeah,
literally. So looking at your IT dictionary, in your own opinion, what's your favorite, term?
Favorite term is difficult. I don't remember all of them. There's quite interesting number of them. When I was collecting stats just to make sure it's evenly balanced, when I saw the final number, I realized that people won't believe that it wasn't planned because it is exactly 1,666 terms translated. I can say my favorite part, looking back, is Agile. But probably my favorite line that I, for some reason, stuck with me, which is also showing a little bit my way of thinking, is at the end of Corpoland. And I will maybe explain this in a moment. At the very end, when I'm making fun of the security department, and translation of least privilege principle. Basically, translation, it was, if you can do your job, we fail the towers. Which kinda is how security looks works sometimes in the, especially in corporations. But to maybe to for listeners, explanation, the book is composed into five separate parts. First is core IT, which is lingo from the trenches, what people in IT departments actually, how they speak, how they think, and ridiculing that. Second is agile rituals and other cargo cults. So basically entire part comparing the modern agile to the religion, which kind of is. Then there is Corpoland, so basically entire part making fun of various aspects of working in corporation. Then there is Startupistan, where I'm flipping into making fun of startup culture, hustle, trust the founder, and all this stuff. And the last part is AI, new kid in town. And just to boost the narration, every single part uses different linguistic stylization, just to highlight the absurd that is hidden there. So, for instance, the Corpulant, I'm mimicking the legalese jargon in Startupistan. It is a mix between Soviet agit prop with Latin America revolution. Agile is literally mimicking the religious tomes, scriptics, and stuff. So writing that was a lot of fun. And AI was literally new kid in town. So basically it is personifying the exchange student that comes to the school. Nobody understands him fully, but he's so charismatic that everybody wants to befriend him.
Awesome.
Sounds like there's a little bit of everything in there for even somebody like me who is not from the IT field. I think I would find it interesting.
So I tried to make it accessible. Of course, there are some inside jokes that would be difficult, but I really, really tried to make it accessible to everybody, and considering the origin story that I started writing it for legal departments, I think that it's quite clear that IT wasn't the original target. And well, opinions from some people I gave it. So if you ever worked in any bigger organization, you would notice some of those patterns probably, even if it's not IT.
Awesome. All right. Well, we usually like to ask our guests a question before we get into asking you to plug your work and everything else, which, you know, is very important to us. Through our lives, we meet people that are impactful to us, that have, you know, a major impact on our lives, maybe the way we think about things, how we work, how we live our lives, interpersonal relations, etc. Is there someone in your life, or some, you know, an author, it could be a, you know, historian or whatever you want, that you'd like to give a shout out to and say thank you for being impactful to me?
So in terms of people, the group would be too broad to pick just one, and I don't want to spend the next half an hour listing everybody. I could say the ex-girlfriend that made me write the IT dictionary, but that would be a little bit too cynical. But definitely on the very high on the list would be my high school English teacher, who really quickly pushed me into learning English. It wasn't literature, it was purely foreign language for me, but that was a big change and kind of planted a little bit of the hard work culture. And I need to mention, maybe that's not a person, more as a work of that heavily inspired, especially IT Dictionary at some point I realized, well, would be two comedy show, comedy movies, both from 1999, so surprisingly. One is Office Space, and second is much less lesser known Mating Habits of Human of Earthbound Humans with Carmen Electra. They are both comedies that were very close to what I tried to achieve in IT Dictionary. So basically, a very thick, very strong layer of satire, you know, Office Space. So you can think of the other one is similar in this term. But underneath of the thick layer of satire, there is really smart observation on the top regarding the topic it was making fun of. So that really, considering I was a teenager, that really formed a lot of the way I'm thinking and approaching.
Awesome.
My writing nowadays, that for sure.
Very cool. All right. So let's give you a bit of time. Go ahead and tell us where we can find you, what, you know, what you're working on, maybe any future projects.
So without diving too deep into marketing, so definitely I would encourage to just start from the adamkorka.com. That's a place where I put most of the information about what I'm doing, how I'm doing. There's also a lot about the workshop, the tools I'm using, even source code of some scripts I was using during writing. There is a blog to see a little bit deeper into my way of thinking, and contact to contact me, sign up for newsletter where I give even more personal runs that cannot go public, let's say, or shouldn't, and LinkedIn. As for what I'm working on, that's an interesting topic on its own, because when I once I started, the list of ideas started flowing. So, well, right now, definitely the Fakap Almanac series. I'm in the middle of writing second volume, and considering that I want to finish all four volumes by the end of the year, that's quite ambitious timeline.
Wow.
But I already have idea for at least three or four more projects afterwards. Some of them will be serious, some of them not. But it will always sort of all the time revolving about two core values that you could notice, especially in the public text like blog. One is focusing more on the failures rather than the celebrating successes. And second, systemic thinking to spot the patterns, like history and the world likes to rhyme. It's good to start noticing those similarities. As an IT nerd, I have to use some jargon, sorry for that, isomorphism. So basically similarities in the mechanism underlying, not to just feel smarter or whatever, it's just to be able to predict better what could go or what could happen, namely what can go wrong, because it will. So long story short, just if you like what I have to say, I would recommend just check the website. I guarantee there is some content, and if that's not enough, you'll find more information about where to look even more.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. We very much appreciate your time. It's been a wonderful conversation. Hope our listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have. I can't speak for LX. Did you enjoy it?
I did, very much.
Awesome.
Thank you for coming on, Adam. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
And remember, go check him out, adamkorga.com. You'll be able to find links to his books, his blog, some write-ups and some little excerpts, etc., a little bit about Adam himself. great site. Lots of fun, actually very fun writing. I really do enjoy your writing style. And
I'm going to sign up for that newsletter.
There you go.
I would also recommend if you check either in the IT dictionary book information or on the footer, there is a bingo game. So if any of the listener works in the corporation, I would strongly recommend check it, open it, and use it on the next All Hands meeting.
Oh my goodness, I'm so going to do that. It's going to be hilarious. All right. Thank you again.
It is a generator, so you can generate separate bingo cards for all your team members. So.
Awesome. All right.
Nice.
Well, thank you again for joining us, Adam. And remember, you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, X, Telegram, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Amazon Podcast, Apple Podcasts, and just about anywhere else podcasts are served up. If you liked the show, give us a thumbs up. If you didn't like it, yeah, give us a thumbs down. Leave a comment. If you have an idea for a guest, a topic, a series, let us know. We'll chat with you and see what we can work out. And remember, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.
Thanks for stopping by. See you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.